Hello and welcome to a week five edition of the quote unquote expert, quote unquote square table. My name is Adam Levitan. I, of course, am the father of Jerry, the most beautiful beast in the world. As always, I'm joined by a young hippie who was apparently under the weather this week. He drank his Cochambu coffee or whatever the hell it's called. And he is with us. JM, what's going on?
You don't know about kombucha?
Kombucha, yeah. No. Do I look like somebody who knows about kombucha?
Dude, kombucha is awesome. No, I actually had wellness tonic that was awful. And I had to lay off it because it made my brain fuzzy. So feeling better, man. You know, I've had like literally 10 people on Twitter tell me how tired and awful I look on the square table. Like every week. And I'm like, dude, it's a lot of work. I don't know what you...
Compared to a beauty like me, you look awful. But for generally speaking, you don't look awful.
I mean, I'm alive. So I'll take that.
Well, listen, when you're doing your own thing, man, not only is it risky, you get sick. You have no choice but to work through it when you're running your own business. And also, like, I'm afraid you're going to go out and get hit by a bus. I mean, if you go out and get hit by a bus, this show is over.
Yeah, we got, I'm insured for that exact scenario. If I get hit by a bus, the people who have invested in the site, they get paid. So watch out for those buses.
Wait. If that's true, I might have to hire some buses to run you over.
Adam's got a piece of the site. Adam's going to, I'm watching my back.
You shouldn't be publicizing that.
And your boys up here, yeah, you know, we got to take care of you if I get knocked out of commission. Hopefully that doesn't happen because we got a good thing going with the site. Before we get started, actually, if any of you are watching this, you're not subscribers, just a couple quick notes I want to throw out there. First of all, part of the reason we priced the site so low, $49 for 12 months, is because this really is vital information to have. We could have probably made a little bit more by charging more. But you're honestly at a disadvantage without this information. I didn't want to price it out of range. Anybody who's playing more than $6, $7, $8 a weekend, this is pretty important information to have. So just a reminder, guys, we're not a picks site. We don't have advanced models. We're not a lineup builder. Other people are doing a great job with those things. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. One thing that was really missing was just a site that puts really high level research and information into your hands at the start of the week. And that was what we built here. So really want to encourage you guys that, you know, we're at week five. A lot of you are getting settled with your process. If you're looking for picks, we're obviously not the site for you. That's cool. But if you're the kind of player who likes to think for yourself, do your own research, build your own rosters, that was why we put together this site. So rather than say you got 12 hours to research, 8 hours to research, rather than starting your week with, you know, from scratch and doing all that research on your own, you can start with 30 hours of research done for you. And then you can use your time for strategy thinking, for roster building, for deeper research. So again, $49, it carries for 12 months. So that includes next year's preseason content, the first few weeks of next season, the rest of this year. Also, last thing, I know Adam hates this, but we got a 30-day money-back guarantee. So that means like the rest of this week, week 6, 7, 8, 9, you can get all that for free, borrow this information. If you don't think this is a good fit for you, just send us an email and you get your money back. So while we're at this point, a few weeks in, we still have a lot of the season left. Wanted to throw that out there. $49, you're basically paying like $1 per 10 hours of research. Saves you a lot of time, puts you in great position. So with that, we got some stuff to talk about, right?
Yeah, I want to point out one thing. When you say you have this research, you're referring to the column. Like, people might not even know what you're talking about with the article. Why don't you tell them quickly what the article is that you're referring to?
Yeah, for anyone who's not familiar with it, essentially break down every game from top to bottom. And we look at everything from route trees to what defenses like to take away to what coaches like to do. You know, I coached football. I've been immersed in this for the last 15 or 20 years, studying football, researching all this stuff. I've been doing DFS for a half decade. So, you know, it's uncovering things like Taylor Gabriel last week that if you have 8 hours for research, you don't have time to go through every game top to bottom the way that, you know, I have the luxury of being able to do and watch all the film and know what the different coaches are trying to do. And so it's getting all that research that says, look, we're not just going to guess on each game. We're going to actually dig into how players are being used, how they set up in this matchup, Also ownership projections, which is $150 without a subscription, just for that, you know, $50, you have access to that. And again, every game broken down, we're going to keep adding stuff each year, new things for each game, really gives you a big edge on the field to start your week with that information already in hand.
As for this week five slate, I think we've had some really strong kind of sub 5K wide receiver plays over the last couple of weeks that have kind of opened up roster construction really well. And I do think there are some options below 5K at wide receiver, which we'll talk about this week, but maybe not as strong as we've had, which creates kind of an interesting roster situation. I also think that this Atlanta-Pittsburgh game is so unique that it's hard not to have that game kind of drive the slate. So tell me what you think about this week five slate overall.
Yeah, the pricing is really sharp in most places. So if you're going to pay up for Julio and Antonio Brown, you're obviously going to sacrifice in other places. I think that there's a lot of interesting things. It's five or six running backs, above, I think six running backs above 6K that I really like, five wide receivers above 7K that I really like. So it's figuring out how to fit as much floor and ceiling onto your roster as you can. I might actually be a little less heavy on this Pittsburgh-Atlanta game than others just because there's other spots I like too. There are a lot of high total games this week and a few guys who are a little bit cheaper. But yeah, I mean, this week you're going to need essentially a jailbreak week. I'm trying to build my rosters, including these cheaper guys, trying to target as many potential 25 to 30 point games as possible. It's not going to get it done to take these 6-7 points here to try to get 20 points there. You're going to need a big score this week. So again, like think jailbreak style, think how you can just squeeze as much upside onto a roster as possible. It's going to be really important this week.
There are some options below 6K and, we'll talk about some ones that are stronger. There's one that I want to start all the way at the bottom, though, where I've heard people talk about. I personally don't think I'm going to end up here, but it could not be a much better spot for Russell Wilson to keep his foot on the gas in a home game against the Rams team that's going to ring up a huge number. You'd be betting on a lot of garbage time for Russell Wilson to rack up stats in the second half. We know he's going to be so slow. We know Brian Schottenheimer is going to try to run the ball at first. He'll be unsuccessful. I don't think I'm going to end up on Russell Wilson due to schematic concerns, due to weaponry concerns, but what do you think about him at 5,100?
Yeah, Russ is, I mean, he's not in my top six. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we take Price out of consideration, if we put Price into consideration, there's a guy right above him that I prefer. His offense is really, really bad. I think that we'll get to Doug Baldwin in a bit. I think he's a possible jailbreak play at his price. He has 30-point upside, but I have concerns that with the way the Seattle run defense is played, the Rams are going to destroy the Seahawks on offense, but they can do it with Todd Gurley. Last year we had was that a bark for Todd Gurley or was that for Russ Wilson? We got
just an angry bark.
But yeah, like the Rams last year, Todd Gurley absolutely destroyed them. Four touchdowns, over 100 rushing yards, another 30 receiving yards. And this game sets up great for him. Yeah, this like the one of the three worst schemed offenses in the NFL right now, alongside the Cowboys and the Cardinals. This offense is legitimately really bad. Rams are number one in pressure rate in the NFL. We know how bad the Seahawks offensive line is. Russell Wilson's mobility seems to be a little compromised right now. So he's not a guy who's drawing my eye. I mean, do you have a different take than I do?
No, totally agree with you. And I think people will go there just because it's eye-opening to see Russell Wilson that cheap. But for me, the offense is just so bad. Totally agree with you. You already alluded to Derek Carr, who I think has played better than most people believe. And Joey Bosa's loss has made such a huge impact on the Chargers' defense, bigger than I thought it could have been. I will say that Casey Hayward has dominated Amari Cooper in their last couple meetings. I think there are options below 5K in Carr, in Bortles, in Stafford, and I think I would prefer a couple of their guys to Carr, but talk to me what you think below 6K.
Yeah, just this Chargers-Raiders game, if we didn't have a couple of these other high-total matchups on the slate, this would be a spot that everyone would be talking about. People don't realize how good this Raiders offense has been. Obviously, they haven't scored touchdowns, but people have talked about, you know, I think it was in Silva's matchups column, he brought up Amari Cooper's separation is near the top of the league. Well, you know, actually, these guys, Cook, Amari, Jordy, they're all near the top of the league in expected yards after catch per reception, which just speaks to the scheme that John Gruden's running. I know that all this trash talk about John Gruden as a personnel guy and as a team builder, we forget he really is good at scheming an offense. I mean, this is the guy who brought up Sean McVay years ago. Obviously, the Grudens have a good thing going with scheming offense. This offense has looked really good. Derek Carr has, I think, 298 yards was his worst passing game this year. Touchdowns were an issue early on, but it's a great spot. And again, yeah, last year I was late to the party on believing the Chiefs defense was as bad as they were. This year I'm like a week late on the Chargers, but this defense is bad. When I can't see why a defense is bad, why they've gotten so much worse, it's harder for me to go there. But if I can't see why, it's also less fixable for them. So, I mean, yeah, I'm fine with this spot. All of the Raiders are underpriced. So that makes a really interesting setup on this slate where in cash games you could load up on three or four of them, and then that enables you to get some higher priced guys. So Carr is definitely highlighted for me, and I like him a little bit more than Bortles. Mm-hmm. And then we get up to the 6K guys after that who I like more than Carr, but price is obviously a consideration then.
Yeah, real quick on Bortles, I think the spot sets up well for him. It's just, Bortles is inconsistent and he's like aggressive, he's going to challenge guys deep. And I give him credit for that. He has more mobility than people realize. And yeah, the Jacksonville defense should give up more points than they normally do, leading to Bortles forced into more attempts. We know that with Fournette out, the play calling splits are favored massively towards passing in Jacksonville. So I do think Bortles is okay, but I think the guy below 6K for me, I prefer most, is Matthew Stafford in this home game against the Packers, who have struggled so badly against wide receivers over the last couple of years. And then you get into this spot where, assuming Marvin Jones can play, you have three really, really good wide receivers on the Lions. So tell me what you think about Stafford before we move to the 6K range.
Yeah, I have some questions about the Packers defense. Mike Pettine came in, totally different scheme. He's loading up on defensive backs, trying to make things difficult on the back end. But the only passing attack they've actually faced is the, I almost said Adam Thielen and the Vikings. Technically, it's Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. And a lot of the routes that Diggs and Thielen slammed the Packers on are routes that Marvin Jones and Golden Tate and Kenny Golladay can run. So I like this spot a lot as well. I've built some Stafford teams. I think it's an extra 500, right, to get from Carr up to Stafford. So that's what I'm considering. And yeah, Bortles, I think, is a great tournament play. There's so many things that, so many variations of potential game script in this Chiefs-Jaguars game that I'm not using Bortles in cash. But I do think that Bortles has as much upside as any of these other guys, possibly even more upside. So all three of them are strongly in play in tournaments, and I know that he's technically 6K, right? But in that same sort of range is Kirk Cousins, who I like a lot this week, in an absolute smash spot against a Philly team that just filters everything toward the air. The Vikings have no run game right now, so it's going to be a ton of passing for him as well.
Yeah, a perfect spot for Kirk Cousins. It's just on the road, and Philly isn't always the easiest place to play. But besides that, just from a matchup perspective, perfect spot. I mean, Dalvin Cook can't do anything out there, not even sure if he'll be active, and Eagles are so good against the run the last couple of years, and now they lose Rodney McLeod. Jalen Mills is regressing. Ronald Darby is struggling. I mean, and the best part about playing Cousin Stacks is, like, you know where the ball is going, right? Like, you know he's throwing to Diggs and Thielen. So I like Cousins a lot as well. Let's keep going up the 6K range here. We can talk about this Falcons Steelers game. Matt Ryan is 6,600. Big Ben is 6,900. I assume we all agree that Big Ben is in an amazing spot to rip through this Atlanta defense. Obviously, they're missing Grady Jarrett now. They're missing Derek Shelby on top of, obviously, all the guys that they're missing before, Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen and Deion Jones. Is it worth trying to get to 6,900 to get to Big Ben?
Yeah, I mean, who on this slate is likeliest to put up 35 plus points? I think you'd have to say Ben, Matt Ryan, and actually Cam Newton as well. So I think that those three are in a different class than these other guys. You're rostering Carr for a cheap 20 to 25 points. You're rostering Stafford, hoping that he outscores Carr by about five or so. Cousins obviously has the upside, but I actually think that the Minnesota defense is going to get back on track a little bit this week. Most of their issues have been communication related. So that's fixable, kind of like the Patriots last year through the first 3 or 4 weeks. So yeah, I mean, the chance of a shootout for Cousins are lowered. Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisberger, and then just the way the Panthers are using Cam Newton under Norv Turner gives all of them more upside than any of these other guys. So I think if you're looking for just pure upside, all these guys are the place to go. I think it's interesting to note that what the Falcons are good at, even, you know, as they've lost all these guys, they're still keeping the ball in front of them. That's your whole MO, is force short passes. So we're not going to see Roethlisberger hammering downfield throws like he did against the Chiefs, or at least having huge success with those, because as the Falcons are dealing with these injuries, you know, they're just playing even further off the ball, keeping more in front of them. But they're going to pick up 7, 8, 9 yards of play on all these underneath passes to Juju and Antonio Brown. So yeah, Ben for that, and then the Steelers have just been awful on the deep ball. So Matt Ryan has the potential to go, you know, 15 fewer pass attempts than Ben Roethlisberger, but pile up the same number of yards on these deep balls. So yeah, for both those guys, I like them both quite a bit.
Only guy I left on my list we didn't mention is Phillip Rivers, but at 6,700, it's hard to stomach him when we can go 200 more to Ben or 100 less to Ryan, and that could certainly lower ownership on Phillip Rivers. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I haven't really thought about him says quite a bit. The Chargers can score in so many ways, and Oakland's so bad against the running back. I honestly think, and we'll see this week whether or not this proves to be true, that coaches talked about getting the ball to James Conner a little bit more. I kind of think the Steelers have just abandoned the run for now, right? I mean, like the last couple of weeks, they didn't even try early in the game. I know they fell behind quickly, but it just makes sense for the Steelers to score through the air. Steelers' run defense is better than their pass defense. It makes sense for Atlanta to score through the air. So yeah, I would have a hard time going to Rivers this week.
Anything else we didn't talk about at the quarterback position?
No, you have any thoughts on Cam Newton? Do you not put him in the same class as these other guys?
No, I mean, I like him. We talk about on here a lot. I mean, Cam Newton for me is in play almost every week, and this is an awesome matchup. Olivier Vernon remains out. Eli Apple, I believe, remains out, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, I mean, this Giants team is so, so, so bad. And yeah, I'm always down to play Cam. It'd be hard-pressed for me not to find the 500 to get to Ben, but yeah, I'm always down for Cam.
Yeah, I like Cam, and I like Cam McCaffrey stacks because Janoris Jenkins is going to be on Devin Funchess, which, by the way, you know, we can look at the pure stats on Janoris Jenkins, what he's allowed. He got burned by Tavon Austin, but after that, he faced Michael Thomas and DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, throw out just the pure stats. He actually held those guys below expectations, yeah. And Devin Funchess is not Michael Thomas or DeAndre Hopkins. So, I mean, this just filters everything toward Cam and McCaffrey this week. I think that they're going to combine for 50, 55 points with upside for more than that.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, speaking of McCaffrey, let's move to the running back position. I think that a lot of the ownership is going to be concentrated at the top. Gurley, Gordon, McCaffrey, and Connor. I think people might even try to play all three of those guys together, which leaves you with not much salary to spend elsewhere. What do you think? First of all, do any of those guys stand out to you as clearly above the rest?
I guess no. No, I would love it. I mean, the first three stand out to me above Connor. Connor's not a guy that I want to play just because the usage hasn't been there. Also, we talk about him taking over the Le'Veon Bell role, right? Ryan Switzer played 30 snaps last week, and they literally used him in the Le'Veon Bell pass game role. They would motion him into the backfield, motion him out to the slot. They would motion him back and forth to get a read on what the coverage was. They were throwing him the actual pass routes that they throw to Le'Veon Bell. He had 7 targets, 7 catches, 32 yards. So I'm not convinced that Connor is going to suddenly get 9, 10 targets this week. So yeah, for me, it's pretty clearly Gurley, McCaffrey, and Gordon. You can fit all three of them. You can also go down, sacrifice one of them and go down to Mixon or David Johnson. Mixon's the better play, but I like both those guys as well. I'm kind of leaning toward a roster construction that'll have 2 high-priced running backs, 1 high-priced wide receiver, but there's a lot of different ways you could go with it. Do you have any takes on those top guys? Anyone you like more? And also David Johnson and Mixon, any takes there?
Price considered, I think Christian McCaffrey stands out as the best for a lot of reasons that you mentioned. I mean, coming off of a bye and a candidate to play 95% of the snaps and see such a huge pass game. I mean, like, his target share is like 27%. It's like wide receiver one status. Then you throw in the carries and work around the goal line too. So yeah, I think McCaffrey, when you consider Price, stands out to me. And I think I'm a little higher on Connor than you. Maybe I'm biased just by what running backs have done to the Falcons. I understand what you're saying about Ryan Switzer, and maybe that comes to fruition. I do think that Steelers have like found themselves down 14-0 so fast the last couple weeks. It's like the game plan just gets away from them. And the next thing you know, they're throwing the ball to Ryan Switzer seven times, you know, and maybe that wasn't planned. Maybe that just happens. And maybe it'll be more based with Connor here. But I definitely hear what you're saying as we go down. Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to play Gio Bernard so bad the last couple weeks was because we know they don't like Thomas Rawls. We know maybe they like Mark Walton a little bit more now, but I don't think they trust Mark Walton too much. And we could see huge usage for Joe Mixon. Now, the concern is he's coming off this knee injury. I think he's fine. I think he's 100%. And it should be a really good spot for Joe Mixon, given that there's no John Ross, there's no Tyler Eifert, Xavier Howard's going to be on AJ Green. And I agree, Mixon's an awesome player. They used him in the pass game a ton in the preseason. I guess the slight hesitation is that he's coming off this knee issue. Does that concern you at all?
Well, there we go. I got to get off mute. Yeah, I like Mixon. I'm a little concerned about the knee just from a, you know, logical standpoint, but there doesn't seem to be any concern among the Bengals, among their beat writers, among the team. And like you said, Xavier Howard on AJ Green, Tyler Eifert out, John Ross, I mean, out, but not really doing much.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just lines up for Mixon to get 22 to 25 touches again. So if I'm going to pay, you know, let's say, obviously Todd Gurley's in a different class of player, but if I'm going to pay $9,400 to get 22 to 25 touches or $6,900 to get 22 to 25 touches, what that salary opens up is really interesting. So I'm definitely playing around with, you know, maybe trying to fit Gordon and McCaffrey and Mixon, or just going Gordon and Mixon or McCaffrey and Mixon and then paying up in another spot from there. Yeah, I think that Mixon is going to have a hard time failing. The question isn't if he's going to get you 20 points. The question is, can he get you those 30 points? I don't know that he can, but at that price, if he gets you 22 to 25 this week, I think we're feeling pretty good about what that opens up in other spots in the roster.
No, that would be amazing. I do think that the Bengals offense will regress from what we've seen, given all the guys they're missing here. Like, also, Billy Price is going to be out again. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I love Mixon, and I want to be in on it. I just think the Bengals offense isn't going to like go nuts here, and the Dolphins have been playing so slow, and like these two teams are candidates to run the lowest plays of the week in this game. And that would concern me too. But yeah, I think I prefer Connor to Mixon for 600 more, but it sounds like you don't. But I guess we'll have to see on Sunday. The one guy that you mentioned who I'm also interested in, man, I thought Josh Rosen played well and elevated this offense as a whole, and as the offense elevates, like, it's just such good news for David Johnson to get more red zone opportunities, to just get more plays under this belt, period. David Johnson still wasn't used the way I'd like to be used in the pass game. And we've talked on here about how San Francisco actually, contrary to popular belief, has a pretty good rush defense, but David Johnson could just absolutely torch this team if they used him as a wide receiver. I'm not confident they will, which makes him a scary play, even at 6,300, but man, if it was Sam Bradford in there or somebody worse, I would say, fine, I'll pass on David Johnson. With Rosen in there, I'm more intrigued to play David Johnson.
Yeah, Rosen, there's concerns about volume, obviously, and the way they, you know, held him back and slammed David Johnson in the line 22 times. But yeah, I mean, David Johnson, his usage is going to increase. It was funny, Steve Wilks talked this week about things that the Cardinals did well last week. One thing he talked about was getting David Johnson lined up at wide receiver, which he did, like, three times all game. And he just said, you know, we got to keep doing that, opening up the offense. It's like, so do that 20 times. Why are you putting him out there three times, four times? But yeah, I'm with Mixon, with Gio out, Mixon in, I'm leaning more toward Mixon at this point than David Johnson, but I do like both those guys quite a bit. I'm still messing around with both of them. And I think that there's some savings we can take at running back too. So I don't think we have to go high priced either.
As we get into the 5K range, I mean, TJ Yeldon burned a lot of people in that game. I believe it was 2 weeks ago, maybe, when Fournette was out, and he ended up only going 60-40 with Corey Grant in terms of snaps. TJ Yeldon does have an extremely good matchup at 5,600. He does catch passes. He's not one of these backups that can catch passes. I think TJ Yeldon is probably a better play than people are giving him credit for this week, because there are so many people got burned the last couple of weeks. Could you see yourself ever going back to TJ Yeldon?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Obviously when we talk about DFS, we should always be thinking in terms of large sample sizes. And a lot of people were upset a few weeks ago when Tevin Coleman outscored Yeldon. I liked Yeldon a little bit more, but we've seen Yeldon's outscored Tevin Coleman three of the other 4 weeks this season. Yeldon's a good player. His role's there. Interestingly, though, he's been kind of held to 12 to 14 touches, and his non-touchdown floor has been around 9 or 10 points. So another guy who's been held to similar touches and the same non-touchdown floor has been Austin Eckler, who's 1,400 cheaper. So I actually like, I've had some rosters with Yeldon and then realized, well, this 1,400 can go quite a ways if I go down to Eckler. That's an interesting thing to consider. But yeah, I mean, I think Yeldon at 5,600 is underpriced. I think Eckler at 4,200 is also underpriced. So, I don't want both guys because I'm not targeting 12 to 15, 16 points. I really need these high scoring games this week. I'm fine with Yeldon. I think he's a strong play. I think he's a top 8 or 9 option for me this week. You know, when we consider price, consider everything, definitely in the rotation for me this week.
There is a narrative out there that with Green Bay's wide receivers so banged up that they're going to take some type of run heavy approach. And we saw Aaron Jones lead Packers running backs in snaps last week, started the second half. I think his early down role will continue to expand. The problem for me is he's not going to play on pass downs. We know that's going to be Jamal Williams. We know that's going to be Ty Montgomery. He is only 4,300. Any interest in getting in early on Aaron Jones?
Less interest than I have in Eckler in this phenomenal match. I mean, Jones has a phenomenal matchup too, but we know Eckler's role, and we know that Eckler's role includes receptions. So it wouldn't surprise me if Aaron Jones goes 70, 80 yards and a touchdown, but it also wouldn't surprise us if he goes 60, 70 yards and no touchdown. If he doesn't get the touchdown, this is a guy who's going to get max one catch per game. I think in Silva's matchups column today, yesterday, he pointed out that Aaron Jones has never had more than 20 receiving yards in a game, I think the number was. So yeah, I mean, you're looking for, this is Kareem Hunt last few weeks, is Latavius Murray, more talented back than Latavius, but you're looking for yards and touchdowns. He's going to need a hit for that touchdown to be worth it. So the floor is lower than Eckler. The ceiling's the same. So I'm fine with him for those reasons, but he's not a guy I'm going to end up using over some of these other guys.
As we continue to go off the board a little bit, the Detroit media and the fantasy football world and the football world is all over the Lions about not giving Kerryon Johnson enough work. And LeGarrette Blount's averaging 2.7 yards per carry. Kerryon Johnson's averaging 5.7, yet they keep slamming LeGarrette Blount in there. Is this the week where they unleash Kerryon Johnson in a big division game against the Packers?
Maybe. Does it seem like Matt Patricia to be like, you know what, put this dude out there. I'm going to override what we're doing. This guy's getting 70% of the snaps. Like, if this guy busts out for a long run, awesome. But I can't see going there unless you're talking about building 15, 20 rosters. If I'm building 3 or 4 rosters, he's not in the rotation for me. We can highlight all the reasons the upside is there, but we also have to highlight the usage concerns, which are clear and evident on this Lions team.
If you think that TJ Yeldon is capped in terms of his touches, then you must think that Corey Grant also has a ceiling for touches. He's only 3,700. That sticks out as very cheap if you believe he'll get 40% of the snaps. So it's tough for me to say how much they're going to use Corey Grant. They've been all over the map on that, but this dude is electric when he gets the ball, and he intrigues me just as much as Eckler. It sounds like you are extremely excited about Eckler, but I think Corey Grant is right there with Eckler.
Yeah, I can see that. There's not really – there don't appear to be a lot of sub-5K players who can get you 20-plus points. Obviously, Eckler can, Corey Grant can, but not guys that were locking in for 20 points. This isn't Tyler Boyd a couple of weeks ago where you're saying this guy can genuinely get 8, 9, 10 targets. So it's going to make sense this week to try to get a 10 to 15 point game down here with upside, you know, hope that whoever you pick goes off, and then fit in these jailbreak guys up top. So with that said, yeah, Corey Grant's part of that. He's not a guy that I've really been looking at, but his range is in that 8, 12, 15 point area. There's just so many. This Chiefs Jaguars game is such a weird one for me because it could go so many different ways. So I have a hard time if I'm building one or two or three rosters trying to bet on getting this game right when there's so many other spots that it's so clear how the game flow is going to happen. So that's the only reason I'm not as high on some of these Jaguars players. It's not because the upside's not there. It's just, you know, I see different ways that this game could play out. And we can get kind of unexpectedly low floor games from some of these guys.
Anything else at the running back position we didn't touch on?
Yeah, two guys. Marshawn Lynch is the clear lead running back on the Raiders. Great matchup. He's been getting three catches per game. He's going to get two or three catches this week and hopefully 18 to 20 carries. 5,500, I think that he's a great play in that range. If we're going to talk about TJ Yeldon for 12, 14, 16 touches, I like Marshawn Lynch even more than I like Yeldon at 20-plus touches. And then Saquon Barkley is just so locked into usage and floor points, and this offense is awful, but he's going to be mentioned for his upside up top in tournaments.
All right, let's move on to the wide receiver position. I think one thing people are grappling with this week is my entire life, people are saying Antonio Brown has been the guy we play when the Steelers pass game is in a good spot. However, advanced stats and a lot of stats will show you that Juju Smith-Schuster has actually been the number one wide receiver on the Steelers this season and the best performing Steelers wide receiver, and he's 1,600 cheaper. Obviously, I'd like to play both Antonio and Juju. I don't think that's going to be possible. What do you think about those two guys in the spot for the Steelers pass game?
Yeah, Juju's a better point per dollar play. That doesn't mean he'll outscore AB. That doesn't mean it'll work out this week. But like you said, advanced metrics, target totals have been about the same. Juju's getting more short passes than Antonio Brown, which is actually better in this matchup. I mean, look, Randy Fitchner and this Steelers offense really changes their identity week to week. If you look at the route trees, what Juju and Antonio Brown are asked to do from week to week is totally different. So it's not like they're going to just say, these are the routes Antonio Brown runs. Go out there and run them. And if it doesn't fit in this matchup, oh well. Like, they're going to work these guys into the short areas of the field. But Juju has been used, I think, an 8 out of 8 to like 11 for Antonio Brown, which obviously theoretically means lower upside, fewer air yards. But he just matches up really well in this spot. You can't, I mean, both these guys are going to go over 20 points, right? I mean, it's highly unlikely that one of them falls shy of 20. The question is which guy gets 30, 35 points, and it could be either, but I'd be fine taking the savings and betting on Juju this week. Slowed down talking there at the end because I started thinking one interesting either or for me this week is actually Juju or Stephon Diggs. And before you say that you like Thielen more than Diggs, I do too. So it would be Thielen and Diggs or Thielen and Juju. And there's a strong case to be made for going Thielen and Diggs there. Any take on these Vikings wide receivers compared to the Steelers wide receivers?
God, I know. Steelers feel better at home to me than coming into Philly, but God, it's a great spot for the Vikings wide receivers. I mean, Adam Thielen is on pace to just shatter the target record set by Calvin Johnson in 2012. I mean, it's crazy. Anytime Kirk Cousins is under pressure, he just like throws to Adam Thielen, and he's going to be under pressure in this game, I know. Derek Barnett's out for the Eagles, but they're still going to get pressure due to this offensive line on Kirk Cousins, and he's going to look for Thielen right away. So, yeah, I love Thielen. I think I prefer Juju, but I don't know, man. We're splitting hairs there. I like all these guys for sure. And the fact that these guys are so strong, I mean, even in this game, I think Julio's going to go slightly under-owned. Guys like Keenan Allen and Brandon Cooks, who we're not really on. I'm sure. I don't know. I doubt you're on them, but those guys are going to go super under owned too. And even maybe AJ Green, who's really cheap at 7,200. We know he has a bad matchup, but he'll probably be really under owned too. So yeah, outside of this Vikings and Steelers wide receivers, you're going to get a lot of really low ownership.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to not have Thielen this week. Thielen's one of the first guys I'm locking in this week, and then I'll work around from there. But I'd love to fit in Thielen and Juju or Thielen and Diggs without making too many sacrifices elsewhere. And that's where the Mixon thing comes in, is if you drop down a Mixon from Gordon or from McCaffrey and you pair McCaffrey and Mixon or Gordon and Mixon, it allows you to do a little bit more at the wide receiver spot. You can actually fit in Thielen and Juju, and then you've got four of these guys who all have such monster upside. On a week like this where you're going to need so many points, there's some cheaper wide receivers that can get us 25 to 30. We'll get to those, but I'd have a hard time paying up to Antonio Brown at 9,100, because that 1,600 means I'm now taking Tyler Boyd instead of Juju, or Doug Baldwin instead of Diggs. I mean, that's not an exact either or with the money, but you know, that type of range. So yeah, I mean, I want to fit in as many of these potential 30 point guys as I can. And I think that those are the three I'm really focused on outside of Julio and Antonio Brown.
Before we get to the mid range, I want to talk about what I think is the most important injury situation of the week. And that is in Green Bay, where Randall Cobb has already been ruled out, where Davante Adams is. I kind of think Davante Adams is going to play, but he's questionable. And Geronimo Allison is very questionable with his concussion and hamstring issue. Marquez Valdez-Scantling did play a lot last week, did not see a lot of targets. We know if Aaron Rodgers does not trust you, he does not throw you the football. How do you think Green Bay plays this? Let's say it's Davante Adams plays, but Cobb and Allison are both out. How do you think Green Bay plays this, and would you be interested in Valdez-Scantling at 3,300?
I've been toying around with that all week. As I'm sure everyone has been. It was 2015. I flew out from New York City. We were hanging out there at the Players Conference. I flew to Chicago, drove up to Green Bay, went to a Packers-Lions game where Davante Adams had 19 targets, I think it was. And that was with Jordy Nelson there. So Aaron Rodgers said after the game last week that Davante Adams should have had 20 targets. He had 14. It's not out of character for Rodgers to just, like you said, trust is a big thing for Rodgers. It's not out of character for him to just hammer one guy with targets. So I don't think it's just a layup that we see Valdez-Scantling get 6, 7, 8, 9 targets. Cobb's out, right? It's official. And then I'll be surprised if Allison gets cleared, but it seems like Adams is trending toward playing. You know, the Packers actually practice on Saturdays, so we'll get more clarity after that. But if Davante Adams is out there, Valdez-Scantling is still going to be a guy I'm considering, but he's not just a complete layup for me, because there's a chance that Jimmy Graham gets 8 targets and Davante Adams gets 19 or 20, and then they run the ball more. And MVS gets 4 or 5 targets. He dropped an important fourth and three target last week where he didn't come back to the ball. Aaron Rodgers chewed him out on the sideline afterward. Picked up a 38-yard gain later, but it wasn't schemed to go to him. It was just, it was a play where he came open and Rodgers didn't have anyone else and threw to him. So, yeah, I'll have a hard time going to him if Adams is out there. I think that there's probably better plays down there.
Let's talk about the mid-range quickly. Doug Baldwin stands out as a guy who may not be 100%, but did run a route on 27 out of Russell Wilson's 30 dropbacks last week and led the team in targets. We know he won't see Marcus Peters. We know that Aqib Talib is out. It's actually not a terrible matchup. It's not the best possible matchup, but it's not a terrible matchup for Doug Baldwin. We're basically getting the number one wide receiver and a guy who I think we all think is a pretty good player for 5K. Does he have a ceiling in this inept offense, I guess is the question. Like, I think Doug Baldwin is pretty likely to get like 6 catches for 49 yards or something like that. Can he do more in this spot?
Yeah, there's no reason he can't. The Seahawks still like to throw deep, even with the Stone Age offense, the offensive coordinator change. Russ was targeting Tyler Lockett downfield to do the same with Baldwin this week. I think Lockett's actually interesting too. I expect the Rams to put up a ton of points here. So from there, it follows logically that eventually Russ is going to have to throw more than 30 times. And Will Disley's out. They don't throw to running backs. They got Brandon Marshall hobbling around up there. Jerron Brown. I mean, this is like a Pee Wee football team going against the Rams. But yeah, Baldwin, I started really thinking about him today just because, like you said, targets are going to be there. And they've never really fed him 12, 13 targets. But if he gets 7, 8, 9 looks in this spot, he's a guy who can put up 20 or 25 points. I think that the floor is still like he's appropriately priced for the floor, but he's not appropriately priced for the ceiling. And the same can be said for Marvin Jones. I think it's 300 less than Baldwin. Yeah. Marvin Jones, 4,700. Marvin Jones is literally a guy who can get you 30 plus points. He only has 3 fewer targets than Kenny Golladay. This year, he has more air yards than Kenny Golladay. He has more red zone targets, more end zone targets. So yeah, I mean, Marvin Jones is going to have one of these 25 to 30 point games. Obviously now we have injury issue with him, but if he's out there, he and Baldwin are interesting in this spot as guys who could actually, you know, match these higher priced guys and really bring your roster to the next level.
I want to talk about one of the guys that has been the most profitable for me and I presume us all season has been Tyler Boyd. And now he gets a really good spot because we know Xavier Howard will be on AJ Green. We know that Tyler Eifert is out. We know John Ross. I guess my concern for Boyd is A, the price is up, and B, were those guys making it easier for Boyd to get open? So I do have some concerns about Boyd as his price starts to climb to 5,700, but I still think that he's just a good player with a really good role. So I'm not completely writing him off.
Yeah, I like Boyd, and I wouldn't mind playing Boyd and mixing together because, again, C.J. Uzomah is going to be out there. Fine, he'll get some targets. But, you know, they don't have Tyler Eifert. They don't have Ross. This target distribution is going to be so narrow. They're going to hand the ball off to Mixon and primarily throw to Boyd and A.J. Green. I don't think it's fluky the targets Boyd has been seeing lately. I think we see another 9 to 11, 12 targets. And that's a high projection, right? We throw out these double-digit target games as if they're just candy, as if this is something that every guy just runs around and picks up. Double-digit target games are rare. I think last year, 2 or 3 guys averaged double-digit targets on the year, but there's just not anyone else for them to throw to. You mentioned the concerns about total plays. I think that's a big concern here, but Bengals and Dolphins are both near the bottom of the league in plays run, and among the worst in opponent plays allowed. So realistically, the Bengals could actually see a small bump in plays this week. Worst case, they should stay in the same range. So yeah, I like Boyd quite a bit. The question is, you know, do you take the pricing's tight this week? So do you take the floor and ceiling on Boyd or go down and take just the ceiling on guys like Marvin Jones, Doug Baldwin? And that's going to be a tough decision to make this week.
Yeah, last point on the Bengals, I think given their personnel, they should skew more run heavy, like way more run heavy than they have been. So I'm not going to project double-digit targets for Tyler Boyd here. I think we'll see way more runs than we have seen from them, a way higher running rate than we've seen from them lately. I know that you want to talk about another old guy on the Raiders, and we're going to get there in a second, but Dede Westbrook, it's just – if you think Jacksonville is going to skew pass heavy and have to throw more often than they do, somebody between Dede, Moncrief, and Keelan Cole are going to have a good game. My preference is Dede because, quite frankly, he was a founding member of hashtag team preseason and has dominated every time he's gotten a chance. But I could make cases for Cole also. If you're going to play a Jacksonville guy, do you have a preference between Dede and Cole?
Yeah, Westbrook, Dede just on like feel. If you dig into the matchup, it's Cole. Like last week, Dede had this big game because the Jets played deep and the Jags ran all these short crossing routes that just got Dede the ball in his hands in the short area of the field. He dominated after the catch. The way to beat the Chiefs is to attack them deep, which is where Keelan Cole makes his money. They don't throw deep to Dede as much. So, yeah, I hate this offense from a DFS perspective. I really like it in real life. I think Nathaniel Hackett's a super sharp offensive coordinator, but the way they're rotating these targets, it makes it tough. I think that Dede has a higher floor than Marvin Jones and close to the same ceiling, maybe the same floor and close to the same ceiling, but I'll have a hard time pulling the trigger. I do like DD, and I like the idea of a Bortles DD stack. If I use one of these Jaguars receivers, it's going to be DD, even though the matchup sets up better for Cole, just because I feel more comfortable trusting DD.
All right. And now it's your time. Another Raider who's over 30 years old, is getting a lot of volume. It's Jordy Nelson. He's 4,500. He's unlikely to see Casey Hayward. I have no idea. We didn't talk about this before the show. I haven't read your article yet, but I presume you're on Jordy.
I am, but more as like a cash game stack with Carr, where you could throw in literally throw in five Raiders: Carr, Marshawn Lynch, Jordy, Amari, and Cook, and not have to guess. And you're not going to fall shy of 80 points. Like, literally, you're not going to fall shy of 80 points with those five guys. And then you've saved money and you can pay up elsewhere. So I think that it's interesting in that regard. It's hard for me to choose between Amari and Jordy because they're used so similarly in this offense. They're basically interchangeable pieces of this offense right now. So it's hard for me to say, this is a Jordy game, this is an Amari game, because each week they're kind of running similar route trees and being featured similarly. So I have a hard time just isolating Jordy as a great play. Casey Hayward hasn't played well this year, so I'm not super concerned about the matchup for Amari, or not any more concerned than I am for Jordy. I have a hard time isolating one of these guys. I think, you know, one of these pass catchers is probably going to end up with 7, 8, 9 points. And if you try to guess, you're going to have a hard time. So that's kind of my fear there, unless you see something that you're probably leaving these old men alone anyway, right? So
yeah. No, and I'm not playing Amari either. So yeah, I'm not going to play Amari or Jordy. But yeah, I get it. Also in this range, I think some buzz that has been around Taywan Taylor, just because he's seen such a high, he's seen a rising target share. I'm still not convinced they're ready to use him as a featured player. But we do know Tre'Davious White will be on Corey Davis. In theory, it's a good matchup for Taywan Taylor. We also have Mike Williams in this range at 4,200. Anybody down there that sticks out to you?
Yeah, Taywan Taylor, I've been messing around with him. He got 9 targets last week. Mariota threw 43 times. So more reasonable this week against the Bills would be about 30 pass attempts. So you figure 6, 7 targets for Taylor. He's going to get those targets because they don't have anyone else to throw to. They don't like throwing to Jonnu Smith, clearly. They're not going to throw to Nick Williams. Tajay Sharp isn't a force in this offense. So it makes sense for Taylor. I mean, Taylor's going to be out there. He's going to see 5, 6, 7 targets at only 4K. So, yeah, I like him. The way to beat Buffalo is short passes. So Taywan with the ball in his hands is appealing. Mike Williams, God bless my soul, after I loved him last week. This is like the TJ Yeldon thing. It's like Mike Williams had this bad game the week that I really liked him. Thankfully, I got off him at the last minute because Geronimo Allison was the play in that range once Cobb was out. But, yeah, I mean, Mike Williams sets up great in this matchup. And one other guy in this range is Willie Snead. And the way to beat the Browns is short passes. So everything's been going to John Brown deep, but it's Crabtree and Snead underneath. And they really haven't adjusted John Brown's route tree because they have Snead and Crabtree underneath. So he'll still go deep. And this is a spot for Snead to see another 6, 7, 8 targets. Honestly, you're going to get 8 to 12 points. And if he scores a touchdown, then you get more than that. So not like just a blow-up play, but he's pretty safe at 3,900.
Anybody else at the wide receiver position? We didn't mention any of the Rams wide receivers. We didn't mention Calvin Ridley, who I'm sure you're not on. We didn't mention Kenny Galladay. Well, we briefly mentioned Kenny Galladay, but yeah, any other? Let me ask you this. If Marvin Jones were to be ruled out, which I don't think he will, how far up would that vault Kenny Galladay and Golden Tate on your list?
Pretty high. The Lions are second in pass play rate, and this has been a trend ever since Jim Bob Cooter took over as the offensive coordinator. The Packers invite teams to run the ball. They're playing these soft fronts, playing a lot of defensive backs. So maybe they run a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, 88% of the air yards on this team have gone to Tate, Galladay, and Marvin Jones. They don't really throw to anyone else. So if Marvin Jones is out, then Golladay and Tate are underpriced. So I like Golladay at 6K quite a bit if Marvin Jones is out. Yeah, I mean, there's other guys. There's my boy Cortland Sutton is going to have a big game at some point. I won't be betting on him this week with any major percent of bankroll. Christian Kirk, hey, I got a narrative for you. Christian Kirk and Josh Rosen are building buddies. They live in the same building. So they've been friends since high school. They wanted to play together in college but didn't. Christian Kirk's going to have some big games this year. I don't know if this is the week, but he's a guy to consider as well.
I think until it's actually tent time for Larry Fitzgerald, which to me it is tent time for Larry Fitzgerald, but until it's actually tent time, Christian Kirk's not, I don't think, going to really go off because he's just like feels so much more comfortable out of the slot, it seems like to me. And but yeah, I think both those guys, Rosen and Kirk, I think are impressive. All right. Let's move on to the tight end position. Kind of the first thing that sticks out when you look at tight end pricing is Travis Kelce is only 6K. His price has been adjusted dramatically for this Jacksonville matchup. We've seen Kelce have a couple low usage spots, but 6K really stands out. Then again, Zach Ertz is only 500 more, and he's seen at least 10 targets in every game this year. Do you see any reason to pay up at tight end this week into the 6K range?
If we ever saw a reason to pay up at tight end, we would be so much more rich than we are. Yeah, so I toyed around with Kelce a couple of days ago and then immediately was like, well, why wouldn't you play Ertz for 500 more? Same thing with Kittle at 5,400. It's like, well, you can get up to Kelce, you can get up to Ertz. They price tight end pretty well, I think. They're all tough decisions. The guy who really stood out to me as underpriced was Vance McDonald as a great way to get exposure to this Steelers and Falcons shootout. And if we want to talk about building these jailbreak rosters where everybody can score 25 to 30 points, McDonald is a legit threat for 25 to 30 points. He's also a legit threat for 7 or 8 points. So, you know, take that for what you will, but at his price, you know, you're not killing your roster if he gets you 10 points. And he could smash in this spot. So it's really like, it's those guys that you mentioned, Jimmy Graham and Jared Cook, who we can get to. And then when you get down to the cheaper guys, Uzoma and Howerman, however you say his name on the Broncos. It's like, well, if you can get up to Vance McDonald, who actually has legit upside, I'd have a hard time going to those guys. So for me, it's Vance McDonald, and then you move up to these other guys from there.
The one thing I'll say about Vance McDonald is his usage is not the same as Eric Ebron or Jared Cook. Like, he's only running a route on like 60% of Big Ben's dropbacks right now. And maybe that changes, but I still think they like having Jesse James out there for a portion of the time. So like, there's going to be plays you're going to be watching out there. Big Ben's dropping back and like Vance is even on the goddamn field. You know what I mean? And that's going to be tilting. That said, we've seen what Vance can do once he gets the ball in his hands. He's like infinitely more athletic than Jimmy Graham is right now. And I never considered playing Jimmy Graham. I know like there were so many people that were like, as soon as Cobb got ruled out last year, but it's like, oh, it's a Jimmy Graham week. I have concerns that Jimmy Graham at this point is like a post up basketball player, goal line kind of guy. Have you seen something different to suggest that he still can actually run? Because he can't run like Vance McDonald, that's for sure. He can't run like George Kittle or Kelce or Ertz, that's for sure.
Let's talk about something else. with my Jimmy Graham roster last week, scoring 200 points and not using Ebron. I would take Jared Cook over Jimmy Graham in this spot. Jared Cook is legitimately the number three wide receiver on the Raiders. So Jared Cook is 14th in the NFL in expected yards after catch per reception. Like, he just has so much space to work with when he catches the ball that, yeah, I would prefer Cook over Jimmy Graham, and I would prefer McDonald over Jimmy Graham. And, yeah, you make a good point with McDonald. They don't even when he's on the field, they're not scheming him the ball. But with the Falcons taking away the deep portion of the field, we should see, you know, 5 to 8 dump-offs to McDonald, and then what he can do with the ball in his hands against this depleted defense is interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, one other thing about Vance McDonald, when all the chips were down last year in the playoffs, dude got 16 targets. Like, I remember watching the game. I was like, there's another target for Vance McDonald. 16 targets in a playoff game. Ben obviously will not hesitate to throw to him. So, yeah, anything else off the board at the tight end position?
I don't see a reason to go off the board. For me, it's going to be McDonald, Cook, Jimmy, Ertz, or Kelsey. Or I should say McDonald, Cook, Ertz, or Kelsey. But obviously we get every other position right each week and get tight end wrong. So if someone wants to go just way off the board, go for it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a shame Eric Ebron wasn't on the main slate because, you know, the lock. Okay, let's move to defense. And I think there are a number of quality options this week. Obviously, if you're willing to pay up to 4K, which I doubt very many people will, but Tennessee has shown a fierce pass rush against this Buffalo team, which is so mistake prone. They're 4K though. Can you find yourself ever paying 4K for the Titans defense?
With pricing as tight as it is, I'll have a hard time. I'm interested to hear who you like at defense though, because what I'm seeing everywhere else is like 6 points, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 points. I'm not seeing a single defense that I feel great about. From an upside perspective, the Titans are the only one. So there's definitely a case to get up there in tournaments. They're the likeliest defense to put up 18, 20 points. And if you don't actually lose anything in another spot, like say you go from Golden Tate down to Doug Baldwin in order to get up to the Titans, and let's say Doug Baldwin outscores Golden Tate, something like that. Let's say Baldwin and Marvin Jones both put up big games and the Titans do as well. You gain a big edge on the field who's all moving around salary to pay up at these other spots. But yeah, I mean, I don't think I'll do it myself. I just really like the locked in points of these Vikings receivers, these Steelers receivers, these high priced running backs. So yeah, I mean, it would have to be like super large field stuff before I would make that move.
In the kind of the 3K range, the Carolina Panthers come off of a bye and get to face this disastrous Giants offense with Eli Manning is just a sitting duck. I think they're at least interesting. I think the Bengals with their front four against Miami is okay. But again, number of play concerns. I think the Jets are actually going to play well here. Really tough spot for Denver. Denver comes off of a short week and going across the country to play this lowly Jets team. But I think the Jets will be ready for them. And they make they're interesting against Case Keenum. To me, the Eagles always want to pick on the Vikings offensive line. And yeah, the Eagles defense has struggled, but they can still get after the quarterback. And I'm not opposed to that. So I think there's options. I mean, Cleveland, you could make a case for. Maybe even Buffalo, you can make a case for. Though, you know, Marcus Mariota at times plays so conservative where it's hard to generate a lot of mistakes out of him. I don't know. What do you like?
Yeah, I tried to make a case for Buffalo because the savings down to 2,300 are really nice. There were a few rosters where it was Jets. Like I could go from the Jets down to Buffalo and use that 300 in a big way. And I can't, like, I won't be able to do it. I don't like the Bills enough. And I think that this Matt LaFleur offense in Tennessee is starting to get underway. I think the Bills are very clearly in the conversation. They've been a team I've messed around with. Yeah, the ones I like the most are, you could say Ravens against Baker Mayfield, though it's on the road. And then Jets and Panthers are the ones I'm likeliest to have my main roster right now, which will change. But as it stands right now, has the Panthers. So, yeah, with how tight pricing is, I'd love to save some money. I'd love for there to be like a 2K or 2,300 defense. But I think the Jets are the closest. We'll get to that. I said it last week, man. The Jets have a good defense, and Case Keenum is handing out interceptions each week. So I think the Jets are a totally fine play, probably the sharpest cheap play, and then Panthers are in that mix too. You could also say Broncos, 100 less than Panthers, just going against Sam Darnold's a turnover machine, but tough spot traveling west to east for an early game. I'll go Panthers over Broncos.
Yeah, no, I think the Broncos are definitely in play. I mean, two of the better edge rushers in the league, and then Sam Darnold, who, as you mentioned, just like happy feet and turnover prone. So yeah, I want to be using defenses against Sam Darnold, and I want to be using the edge rushers of the Broncos for sure. All right, let's move on to the stacks. The people have fast-forwarded. They have not listened to a word that you've said for the last hour. You're going to give them one chalk stack and one contrarian stack that you like.
So chalk, and I don't know how chalky it'll be because I'm me and I don't pay attention to anything else, but you can tell me if this is chalky or not. I would be Cousins to Thielen and Diggs. I think that there's just a lot of upside that you can capture there. Obviously, it's not Ben, it's not Matt Ryan, it's not that shootout, but a lot of upside on these guys as well. You kind of cap your overall ceiling, right? Because Thielen could get 30 and Juju could get 30. It's going to be hard for Thielen and Diggs to both get 30. But they've done it before. They've combined for, I think, over 60 points in a game, almost 70 points in a game. And obviously you're locking in 50 points regardless of which guy goes off. So I like that quite a bit.
All right. Yeah, I actually thought that was going to be contrarian, but so many people are talking about it now and how funnelish this Eagles defense has become that I actually think it might not be as contrarian as we think by Sunday. For my contrarian, I think this one will for sure be contrarian. Philip Rivers to Mike Williams. And Mike Williams hurt a lot of people last week, was 16% owned in the Millie Maker. No one is going to go back to Mike Williams this week. And it's hard to click Philip Rivers when you have Ben Roethlisberger and Matt Ryan right there. So I think you'll get extremely low ownership on that. We know Travis Benjamin remains out or is out again after aggravating his foot injury. Mike Williams is going to play a ton, and it's certainly a good matchup against the Raiders.
Yeah, and Williams also creates leverage off of the Chargers running back ownership. I think you go Williams is an interesting play, even without Rivers. As my sort of off the board stack, it's more just a game theory, capture all the points thing, and that's load up on Raiders in cash games. I've started to see some ways to get to some of these cheaper guys that I might not end up doing it because it does limit you basically end up with, I think, three high-priced guys instead of four high-priced guys if you do it. But you do lock in 80 to 100 points by just loading up on five Raiders players in cash games, using the other four spots for upside in other spots. I think that's interesting in cash games this week.
All right. I guess for my chalk stack, we haven't said it yet, but the easiest layup is just Ben to Juju and Antonio. Like, if you can make that work somehow. This Falcons defense, both these teams are playing fast. Both these teams are skewing so hard towards the pass. Serious candidate to lead this slate and plays in this game. So sets up so well for what Ben and Juju and AB like to do. So I know it's expensive. It's hard to fit those three guys, but certainly has plenty of upside.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that the Millie Maker winning team just loads up on this game and then takes some value plays that just end up hitting, right? Because if you just load up on players from this game, you know, just say, look, I can't get these high-priced running backs, but I'm getting these guys. And then you find the right plays in other spots. Your upside is extraordinary and your floor is really high as well. So obviously that's a strong way to go.
All right. Tell the people where they can find your work, where you are writing for roughly 2 cents or half a cent per word. Tell them where they can find it.
Yeah. Check out oneweekseason.com, guys. Seriously, really encourage you guys this week. Week five, you're getting your process settled. Check it out again, 30-day money back guarantee. So borrow the information through week nine. And if you don't like it, get your money back. It really doesn't make sense to not have this subscription with the information that you get put in your hands each week. If you disagree after subscribing, that's great. Not for everybody, but it's a great piece to have for most people.
All right. That is going to do it for the week five edition of the quote unquote expert, quote unquote roundtable for JM, for his hippie cat, for Jerry. I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.